The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, good day, everybody. Even though the holidays are over, or so you think, there's still numerous events that we all have to attend. We have weddings. There's even Academy Award parties and Emmys and Super Bowl parties. And of course, dear to my heart, Mardi Gras balls. And so this week, my guest, you know, if you enjoy playing dress up and like to find your own persona and different characters. My guest this week, Edward R. Cox, which, can I say Eddie? But I'll call him Edward for people.
Sure, call me whatever you like.
Great. He will give us some great tips and advice that will inspire you to become whoever you want to be for that special event. Because it's all about image. Finding that look, that persona you want to portray, whether it's in the boardroom or the bedroom. So I welcome my guest, Edward R. Cox, and he said we can call him Eddie for today.
Hello.
Maybe. Hey, Eddie, welcome to the show. Hey.
Happy Carnival.
Happy Mardi Gras. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm in the studio cranking away at stuff and ready to sit and play with you.
Well, listen, can you give my audience a little tidbit of, like, you're a Renaissance man, besides being a sought-after designer, author, director, what else? I mean, actor?
Well, you pretty much covered it there, Suzanne. I don't have to do a thing.
Well, I mean, they have to read your bio to really go into the descriptive part.
Basically, my story is pretty simple. I was born and raised here. My family was very heavily involved in owning crews and running crews and stuff. My mother worked for Lucia Liuza Designs, making carnival costumes. And when I was very young, by the time I was five, I was already drawing and making patterns on buckram and muslin to start making appliques. And I started designing carnival crews. And it moved into theater when I was a performer as a child. And I have continued to be a designer, actor, performer, director for almost 50 years now. 58 years now.
Eddie, let me interrupt you for 1 second. This is a broad audience. So when you talk about crews, people like in New York and Seattle have no idea what you're talking about. Crews.
Okay, I'll explain a little bit better. However, there are crews all around them. There's a crew of Orleans up in Washington, D.C. that has a carnival ball every year. Crews, the word crew is spelled K-R-E-W-E, such as the crew of Zeus, the crew of Caesar, the crew of Orpheus. These are social organizations that band together. People pay dues. There are events and dinners and barbecues and parties all year long for these people to party with one another. Now, the crew creates a theme, let's say, per every carnival year for their parade or their ball. Let's say stories around the world will be the theme, and you'll have things like representations of Pinocchio or the Snow Queen, et cetera, as characters in the ball and or the floats in the parades. So basically a crew is an organization that presents carnival balls and carnival parades.
That's like the crew of Bacchus, most people have heard of. The crew of Rex, crew of Zulu.
Correct.
Okay, okay, great. And so
I was trying to toss in some of the names that they may not know out there.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you can throw one out. Crew of Omega. Huh?
This is true. Crew of Omega in heaven.
There we go. Okay, so when you got started at 5 years old, you started doing pattern designs, okay?
I started drawing, and my family took notice. I was, like I said, I was actually at the age of five. I was capable of looking at a design and drawing out the pattern on in scale.
Oh,
so the synthesis would then cut the material, because I was too young to cut it, and then I would sit there and help applique, make the appliques happen with sequins and trims and such. And then it moved on to actually being a designer, designing the gowns and the headpieces and the masks. So I guess by the time I was in high school, I was already designing a bunch of carnival crews, as well as tons of theatrical productions, stage
that's
productions.
That's amazing. I think you were with Dionysius.
Excuse me?
Dionysius in high school?
A Dionysian over at Brother Martin, yes. But I'm also a member of STK, Shinto Toru Kabuki, Gateway to the Theater, which is the theater group at Mount Carmel Academy.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Like a past alum. Well, let me ask you this.
In high school, I was involved in productions in other theater groups in other schools. Even though I went to Brother Martin, I was doing some shows, some set work over at Deswich, over at Ursuline, you know, over at Sacred Heart. It's just something that I have always done.
Wow.
I've always been around. I've always been going to all these different locations. Even when people look at me, it's like, wait, why are you over here? I'm over here because I'm done over there. What's the question?
I mean, you're so multi-talented because not only do you do costume designs, you have been, your name's up there for set designs, too.
Yes, I just, a few months ago, I did a humongous production of Cats that I got to design and create the sets and props for. Evidently, it was the most attended production in the theater company's history. I was very pleased with the way it came out. Everybody was, evidently. And there is talk about possibly bringing it back. So,
oh, wow. Well, let me ask you this. Obviously, very creative person, but what does it take? I mean, when one of these carnival crews, when they come up to you and they have that theme, it's not just a little costume you're designing. I mean, can you give the audience an idea of the spectrum,
okay,
how large of an undertaking it is?
It's very easy to do that. Everybody has seen the movie The Wizard of Oz with Julie Garland in it.
Mm-hmm.
Glinda the Good Witch's pink bubble costume. That's a carnival costume. That's the kind of huge stuff that we have to design and then create. Gigantic ball gowns with big flounces and poofs, big mantelpieces, big bubble sleeves, gigantic headpieces, lots of plumes and glitter. Then there's also the exact opposite, where the girls want more of a sleek, slender, slinky ball gown, but you still have to put that much detail on it. There'll be flounces and appliques and rhinestones everywhere.
It's amazing because when you do a king or queen, you still have to incorporate all that, plus their, like you said, the Medici collar, the mantle.
Correct.
I mean,
well, also you have to realize what characters they represent. I mean, even the kings and queens can represent different people. They might be a Russian king and queen, or, you know, a czar, a czarina. They may be someone like Henry VIII. You know, depending upon the theme of the crew, they may have their royalty represent, such as the court of Napoleon. Their royalty always have the Napoleon-esque look. However, other crews are much more fanciful. The kings and queens can become something that's part of the theme rather than a standout king and queen costume. Though they are standout king and queen costumes, they don't have to stand out on their own. They're part of the theme. It's really something that people who hear this and are kind of interested in it should do a little Google search and see what Carnival in New Orleans is like. People think that Carnival in New Orleans is all about going on the balconies in the quarter, getting drunk, and doing what have you to get or throw beads.
Debauchery, right?
That's not the case. It is an it's an artistic family experience. It is artistic. It's religious based. I mean,
right.
The
debauchery
came in several years ago when the many years ago actually, but there's been wild behavior, of course, but there's a collegiate mindset that happened where all these kids on spring break started coming down here, and that's when it started to explode, and that's what the media carries across the country and the world about what Carnival in New Orleans is all about. No, I'm not going to lie. It has become part of it, but that's sequestered down in the French Quarter and only in certain sections. The rest of the entire city and outlying areas is all family-based, artistic theatricality and fun.
And Eddie, you're right, because it is based on rituals and traditions,
yes.
You know, inherent in our Southern culture down here, with it being all, you know, culminating with Ash Wednesday. So, I don't know if people realize that it's religious-based and it's not debauchery, like you said. And you're right.
It's not.
They like to the media likes to focus on the salacious part of it.
Correct.
But
and that's why it shocks so many people when they hear that it's a religious-based holiday and season, and that it's family-oriented, and it's artistic, and it's theatrical. They don't get a chance to grasp those facts because they're having all this drunken debauchery only in just a small section of the French Quarter. That kind of activity happens.
That's
true. What the people think. So it shocks them when they hear how much more there is to it, the pomp, the circumstance, the ritual, the pageantry.
That's a perfect word.
It's amazing. And it goes, and it begins, Carnival begins, in case the viewers don't know, Carnival always begins annually on Twelfth Night, which is January 6th.
And at that point, Eddie, we're getting ready to take a break, and we're going to talk about this past January 6th. When we kicked it off, Mardi Gras. So we'll be right back with my guest, Edward R. Cox. Thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness Presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I'm back with Eddie R. Cox, or better known Edward R. Cox, who's a multiple award-winning actor, director, and designer with over 50 years of experience. And I got to tell you, when you meet him, I wish this was a visual experience instead of, you know, auditory listening, because if you would see some of the designs and costumes and, oh, the fabulous looks, makeup, I can't go on. You have to go to his website, his Facebook page, which he'll give you a bit later. I'm going on and on, Eddie. So
oh, thank you, Suzanne. That's very sweet of you. The designs are great. People need to see them, but I do have a face for radio, so this is fine.
Oh, I know. I mean, I saw your face. We were talking about 12th night, January
12th 6th. 12th night, the beginning of Carnival.
King's Day. And we had the pleasure, y'all were on the local TV channel.
And yes, we're on annually to welcome the beginning of the Carnival season every year.
Yeah. Yeah, and you welcome the crew of Omega at,
yes,
at a crazy brunch.
We were delighted to be a part of that crazy brunch.
But for my guest that doesn't really understand the concept, like they think Mardi Gras starts that day. Could you give a little bit more information?
We can clarify that for them very easily. Mardi Gras is indeed just a day. Mardi Gras is the day before Ash Wednesday. Mardi Gras means Fat Tuesday. Farewell to the flesh before you start feasting during the Easter season, which is 40 days. Mm-hmm. Now, Carnival season is the full time. When people say Happy Mardi Gras, that's great. Happy Carnival is even better because it's the entire season. Carnival begins 12th night annually every year on January 6th. And we celebrate it in many ways, and Carnival season continues from that point, from January 6th through to Mardi Gras. And we don't say Mardi Gras Day because then you're saying Fat Tuesday Day.
Yeah. That doesn't work.
And Mardi Gras does move because of the Catholic calendar and where Easter falls. So whenever you're anywhere across the country or the world and you look at a calendar and it says Ash Wednesday on it, the day before is going to be your Mardi Gras or Fat Tuesday. That day changes every year, but 12th night, January 6th, is annually the beginning of Carnival, no matter what. That's a fixed date.
And what happens that day?
That's when all the Carnival crews truly kick into high gear. That's when the Carnival balls begin en masse. There's parties and celebrations. There are smaller walking crew parades that night all over the city to welcome in the Carnival season. There will be parades all over the metro area and the outlying areas all the time, particularly over the weekends. But the 2 weeks before Mardi Gras, that Fat Tuesday, that's when the parades really go into full swing here in the New Orleans metro area and outlying areas, where there will be parades all over the city.
Mm-hmm. Now, Annie, I want to ask you a question. Also, there's a secret. Okay. It's not a secret to people around here, but there's something, there's a delicacy that only comes out on January 6th, and it only lasts through Mardi Gras season. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I didn't actually hear what you said.
Okay, I said there's a delicacy that's yummy.
Oh, okay, I got you now. Yes, the famous delicacy, or infamous delicacy. There is a thing called a king's cake.
Yeah, can you tell us about that?
King's cakes began in France. It's more of a brioche. In America, American taste, it has since traveled onto a gigantic ring that is very much like a cinnamon bun, is the best way to put it. Then there's icing, and then yellow, green, and purple edible sprinkles on top. Some people put cherries here and there in the corners just to kind of spruce it up. Now, being very inventive,
Down here, yeah.
They're going to add things like cream cheese and strawberries and raspberries inside as a filling. Now we're starting to get into peanut butter with bacon inside, with peanut butter and bacon sprinkles.
Oh, I don't know about that. I haven't heard that one yet. Gosh.
But the funny thing is that you're really only supposed to have king cakes from Twelfth Night to Mardi Gras. However, once again, being creative here in New Orleans, there are Houdat cakes where they take and make a king cake, and they'll sprinkle it with yellow and black sprinkles, edible sprinkles, and sell it for the Saints games. And there's the Kringle cake. The Kringle
cake is
the king cake that they decorate with Christmas colors. So, yeah. Sadly, the king cake is no longer just a delicacy that we can experience only during Carnival.
Well,
we can
find
ways to experience it all year long.
Eddie, did anybody ask you to design the diaper for the baby? Because you didn't talk
yes,
about
I
the
have.
Baby.
Yes, I have.
You have? Oh, my gosh. You got to tell
me. Seriously, the thing that I've designed in my career. Oh. So what else do we have to discuss about Carnival here?
Well, I wanted to finish talking about the baby and the king cake. Nobody knows.
Oh, the baby and the king cake. Okay, now, Now, I need to clarify that then.
Okay.
People insist it represents the little Christ child, and it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't. The only reason that we have anything in the cakes at all was presented by the Twelfth Night Revelers, which is an old-line carnival crew. At their ball, there would be a gigantic cake rolled out, and there'd be, like, let's say, 8 to 10 debutantes, or 11 or 12 or so, maybe a dozen, probably a baker's dozen, that makes sense. They all get a slice of cake during the presentation at the ball. And whoever gets the... one of the either the silver or the gold bean, lucky bean inside their cake, they become a maid in the ball that night. The one who gets the odd colored bean is the queen. So, in order to get that idea across from the Twelfth Night Revelers crew, they started putting beans in the cakes so that if you get the cake, the piece of cake that has the bean or the lucky baby in it, you're the one who has to provide the king cake at the next party. And so on and so on. Now, there are all sorts of other things. Several different bakeries have things other than the king cake baby. They have little pigs. They have little streetcars. They have little scenes.
Oh, my. Okay.
Little porcelain figures. Because that's what they were way back when. They were little porcelain figures because they were cheap. They were in abundance. How many do we have of those? Stick them in the cake.
Yeah.
So it's kind of you blur all that together and you get the basic history of the king cake baby.
Okay, well, we're getting ready to go to break with Eddie, and coming back, he's got some more stories to tell us. Thank you. We'll be right back with Eddie Cox. Thank you.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall-Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Edward R. Cox, or Eddie for today. He's letting us use that informal pronunciation. And his designs and creation are now coveted and demanded nationwide. And when you go to his website, his Facebook, you'll see why. I mean, just blow your mind away. And we were just finishing up a conversation about the King Cake Baby. And during the air break, I was asking Eddie, did he hear about the, we were talking about the different delicacies that are, you know, during this Mardi Gras period. And I asked him if he heard about the drunk food truck. And your response was, what?
No.
Okay. Well, like we were talking about the king cake. And you said they're using different, you know, little symbols for babies or whatever. They also go around and they're serving king cake hamburgers. Are you ready
yeah.
for that?
Yeah.
And it's fabulous. I'm telling you, it's fabulous. I couldn't believe I was.
I couldn't believe
I was eating it. But then again, it was. Don't tell anybody. 3 a.m. But it was a hamburger.
And that's when they hook you.
Yeah. And you know, it's like you said. It's the brioche. It's like the bun with the sprinkles, and it was like a sweet and sour taste. But that's just another takeoff on king cakes. And I was wondering if you heard about that new delicacy. I'm kidding.
I've heard about it. I've avoided it.
I'm sorry?
I've never been out drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't say I was out drunk. No. That was after a ball, you know? You know what I mean? A muses ball. So, but anyway, getting back to the real conversation. You do have the designs besides Mardi Gras, right?
Yes, I do. I design sets, props, costumes, actually poster graphics and program covers and props and just everything for theatrical productions. Whatever a production needs, I can do it. And there are some productions that I wind up doing 2 or 3 different jobs at a time, particularly when I'm directing a production. I'll also design and create everything as well, so it's a true unified vision.
Well, Eddie, do you do, like, say, an individual, like, say, I came to you, and I needed, like, a drop-dead outfit, whether it's for the boardroom or for the bedroom. Do individuals, you know, consign you to create outfits for them?
Yes, indeed. And I mean, from the boardroom to the bedroom, you're creating a persona that you wish to present, and that is part of the mystique of designing and designing as correctly as possible for people and functions, events, theatrical companies, carnival crews, whatever it be, being able to conceive and design and then create the atmosphere and ambiance and the persona that is required from one gig to another, from one person to another, from one event or organization to another.
So, I mean, that's a pretty wide spectrum. I mean,
yes,
does individuals' personalities, do you, when you work with an individual?
Indeed. That comes into foreplay. Let's say somebody wants to design a knockdown, drag-out costume for someone. This woman has to have Okay, what colors, these are the questions I generally ask. What colors are you looking for? Oh, it has to be red. Okay, how about red in an offshoot color? Okay, we got that taken care of. Now, do you see gold accents or silver or both? Then you start designing the character in your mind. Then you start asking them questions. What period clothing do you feel, you know, rests on your body, on your frame well? Do you need something that is totally slinky and such, or do you need something that's a little bit more poofy ball gown with panniers? It depends upon the person's physiognomy. So, yes, you take each person's personality as well as their physicality into account every time you design and create a costume for someone, or a dress, or a suit, or a piece of costuming, whatever.
Well, it's, Eddie,
yes.
What happens when, you know, let's just say somebody comes to you and they see themselves as Marilyn Monroe and they're more like a B. Arthur type? I mean, do you feel, you know, compelled to interject and say, oh, guide them in the right direction, or you let them?
I have to be honest with the people and really sit and discuss with them so that they understand I'm working from a viewpoint that I am here to do a quality job for you. You have to be happy and comfortable with it and or in it and wearing it or working it. And you have to not be anything other than what you are trying to represent, if that makes sense. You can't, I mean, like, you wouldn't possibly wrap somebody up like an Egyptian if they want to be a very tall, thin, sleek, Cleopatra type of person or persona, when their physiognomy just doesn't allow it. You don't want them to feel embarrassed, but you don't want them to feel even worse if they're out wearing an outfit that just does not look right on them. I can't do that to people. It's just very uncomfortable, and I prefer people, like I said, to be happy and comfortable with what they're wearing, and being able to go out in public and wear what they want to wear.
Well, I mean, you're a true professional, and that's what professionals do. I mean, but, you know,
I've been there before. I've been given things to wear that I know do not look well on me, but it was right for the character. Now, in a theatrical presentation, yes, you're going to wear what you're being told to wear. But if you're producing a costume or a special article of clothing for yourself, that's personal. That has to be dealt with kid gloves, but it also has to be discussed and worked out where, let's guide you to this. What do you think of this look? What do you think of this fabric, this costume, this style? You know, it's just, there's a gentle way of guiding someone rather than just saying, oh, my God, you're going to wear that? No. You know, there's two different approaches. I prefer the previous one rather than the latter one.
Better kid gloves than a boxing glove, right? You know,
well, with respect, I always say, dignity, you know, it has to be there.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, you do so many different things. Is there something that you prefer doing over, you know, on stage, making costumes, set design? What is your really true passion?
It really truly is all of it. I have continued acting, not as much as I have been since I moved back home a few years ago. I'm doing some stuff in movies and commercials and stuff, but I'm not doing as much on stage performance, which I adore. I'm actually really now starting to, I'm starting to transmogrify, if that makes sense. I'm more now designing and creating and being a strong visual guide for productions and carnival crews and things. I mean, plus I'm 58. I've got the energy that somebody much younger than me has, but at the same time, the body's like, whoa, no, you don't.
whoa, you don't look any 58. You sure don't act any 58. I mean,
no, well, thank
whatever
you.
You're doing, you know, I mean, you're fabulous. I mean, just totally fabulous. And I also understand you co-wrote a musical, Rapunzel.
Yes, Trail Players Rapunzel with Vatican Loki and Brent Crayon. It was the little show that just had to.
Oh, tell me about it.
We threw it to, together, we had an opportunity with a tiny little grant to create an original musical. So we created this Trials Players Rapunzel, which is set in Holland, with Chocolates as the subtext. So we wanted to be a little different than the traditional Rapunzel story that you see. And we put it together. It was a small, intrepid group of under a dozen people. And we premiered it way out, I want to say, in Destrehan. We had two performances, two weekends only in a row. One weekend in Destrehan and the next week in Hanville. So we opened in Destrehan. It was like, wow, there's something here. Look at these people. The husband and wives are putting their heads on their shoulders and hugging one another and kissing one another during the love song. We got something here. So the next week in Hanville, we spruced the setup that we had a little bit. We plussed everything just to make it look a lot better. The show closed, and then we took it directly into Newman School. Okay. And it ran for several weeks, and slowly, surely, word of mouth started hitting, and people started pouring in. We then took it to True Brew Theater, another big success, and the show played in New Orleans for 2 years, from moving from place to place. We could not stop it.
Oh my God! So it was like a runaway train.
Somehow or other, the word got back to the people running President Clinton's AmeriCorps tour. And they were considering a touring theater situation in the heart of Mississippi that would bring theater to impoverished areas where children had never seen live theater before. And somehow or other, our production of Trials Players was chosen as the cornerstone production. They did three or four other shows on tour as well, but Rapunzel was the big main production, and that was a major experience, going up to Corinth, Mississippi for 9 months and dealing with that tour.
But what an honor. Besides co-writing, did you also do the set design and costumes?
Set props, costumes, the advertising flyers. It came back 5 years later in the 5th anniversary production at Salem Community Theater. It's played L.A. twice, New York 3 times. There was another little tourlet, I believe. I don't quite recall. But there had been talk about possibly turning it into an animated feature film long before Frozen came along. And I still have those designs from the animated feature possibility. So, it's a little show that just could.
Wow. So, I think that's so admirable of you to take your talent and your experience and put it in, be a fountainhead to students and schools.
It's necessary. If they don't see anything, at least an attempt at giving them something of quality and note, they're not going to know it in the future, and they're not going to support the arts. They're not going to support theater.
Right.
And with the funding the way it is, it's getting more and more difficult for schools to do live theater even. And I'm thankful and blessed that I have several that I work with during carnival time that I'm working on for shows right now as we speak. While carnival's going on, I'm working on shows in these schools to help the productions. There's very little budgets, but there's so much heart and so much need for these kids to have this experience that I was blessed with when I was young, which is getting harder and harder to have theater. So, it's all about the family and the children's market. That's where my heart's at.
Well, it's sad, like you said, Eddie, because, research after research shows that music, theater, being able to express themselves through the arts, these children, instead of grabbing guns and cyberbullying or whatever they do.
Exactly.
Give
them a positive outlet for those energies and emotions. And if there's a child that has a situation, whether it be emotional, financial, whatever, you then can see it and you can help guide them to find a way to release it in something positive and creative. And that's how you help and nurture these children these days.
It's
important.
You're right. You have to wonder why when the government takes, and I'm not talking political, please, anybody.
No, it's not political, but it is.
No, but they take funding to see how long a a shrimp can go on a treadmill, but they won't give funding for musical equipment for us kids. That's important.
Well, the situation with the financial aspects in the schools, it seems like they're more willing to put money into sports than they are into any form of arts. And the reply is always, well, because sports makes money. Well, of course it makes money, because you're throwing tons of money at it. Toss a little bit of money the other way. It's so necessary. We don't live in a cookie cutter world, and these children are not cookie cut. So,
I wonder how many kids. How many? It's sad, the patrons that support the arts. I'm talking about adults. You know, there's a few big money droppers, but as an American culture, what we have, it's dwindling, and I'm scared that one day it's, you know, like the ballet, the opera. That's going to be so obsolete.
Right. Some of these things have to adapt with the changes. It doesn't mean they have to go away or die, but they may have to adapt. There are a lot of production companies doing operas that are sticking with the tried and true operas and trying to mount them the way they were or as opulent as they can, and they're finding it financially impossible. There are other companies that are trying to do modern operas and trying to get new blood in to see them and stuff. Same thing with the ballets, same thing with theater. All the arts right now are struggling to reinvent themselves with what they think or what they perceive the audience wants to see. And that's a very difficult thing to judge, what the audience actually wants to see.
Well, you make a good point. I'm going back to Mardi Gras, because I remember the old Mardi Gras balls, the tableau, the ladies with the gloves. You had to have the invitations, the dance cards. Now it's extravaganza.
Now it's extravaganzas and overblown tailgaters.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
It's just that's part of the reinvention that happened with Carnival over the past 20, 25 years or so. Everything changes. Everything has to alter and grow.
Right.
I don't see it as a fad that's going to stop anytime soon. And there's no telling what else is going to hit Carnival, like anything else, that it's going to have to adapt, adjust, or let it go.
Well, Eddie, you made a great point. We're getting ready to go to break again. We'll be back. And your insight, I wonder what you see in the future. So we'll be back with Edward R. Cox. Eddie, for today. Thank you.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves, and we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton. Our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Eddie R. Cox, and he's the creator, the inventor, set designs, costume designs, anything from the boardroom to the bedroom, and you're laughing at me, Eddie. So I
welcome... No, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing near you.
Okay. I welcome you back. You're making me break up now. I'm professional. Okay. There's a question. You know, about after Katrina, you know, that was like 2005. You also worked with Disney World. Can you tell us how you wound up in Orlando and the escapade you had there?
Prior to Katrina striking, we had decided that we were going to move, and pulling me up and moving me out of New Orleans was like uprooting an oak. It wasn't easy. We moved to Orlando so I could work for the company. I'd been involved with the company before in various capacities in regards to character design and layout for visual development for animated features, a little Imagineering and such. When I went down there, the deal was I was being like put into entertainment as a performer. And what was lovely about that experience was being able to deal with families and children, you know, face-to-face and meet-and-greets and such with improv characters and such, and being able to bring my native New Orleanian sense to the characters that I got to portray. I was friends with many, many characters down there, and I mean, some of them, I was a friend of the Mad Hatter, a friend of King Charming in Cinderella Bration, a friend of Mr. Smee, a friend of Santa Claus. And,
that sounds strange when you say all that, okay?
But it really was amazing because we had no idea Katrina was coming when we moved down there. And, of course, Katrina hit, and all I could do was listen to the radio late at night, trying to hear what was going on, trying to get connections with people. And I could see when people came in from New Orleans or from the region or anywhere that was affected by Katrina, I could see it. I can sense it in their shoulders, in their demeanor, the way they walked, the way they looked at things. And I took it upon myself to just, in character, go running up and make a fuss over them. And I was very pleased that a lot of the managers saw that and questioned me, why are you doing that? It's like, I'm from New Orleans. I see these people, they're my people, whether they're from New Orleans or whether they're from the Gulf Coast or anywhere else that was hit by this tragedy. I have to make extra magic for them. And they gave me the blessing. So several of my characters went crazy all over the park during for about a year and a half or so after Katrina, because I could see it in their faces. And it's so necessary to have those people feel better about themselves and the situation so they could at least pull their lives together and get back on track once their trip to Disney was over.
Wow. I mean, that's surely empowering because, I mean, I've been through Katrina.
It was a blessing for me.
To have that.
It was a blessing for me. It truly was, because seeing these people and being able to make the magic, and not just during that time and with that situation, but in other situations when you have children with Give Kids the World and Make a Wish, and you're dealing with them and the child, and they're taking photos and videos and they're crying, and a parent will lean over and say, thank you so very much for making this magic. You are my child's favorite character, and she's got a couple of months to live.
You know, that's one of the reasons why,
like,
Eddie, I wanted you on the show.
It tears your soul open. It tears your soul open, but it's so beautiful to be allowed to be a part of that. So to bring that kind of feeling from my years at performing at Disney back home and adding that into my design work and my creative and the theatrical and the directing and the performing, when people ask what's the one aspect of what you do that's most important, I can't answer easily. It's all part and parcel. It's the gumbo that makes my life.
But that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show, Eddie, because this is the Empowerment Channel, and it's not about the glitter, the glam, the costumes. It's what you bring, how your designs, your aspirations, your inspirations, everything that you share.
That's what everybody brings to the table.
I'm talking about because you're my guest, you would share. And especially, you know, when you see your heart with the children. I mean, when the eyes light up when they see a king or queen or whatever character.
Yes. And once again, the Disney magic, seeing children's reactions to Disney characters face to face. The same thing happens in theater. When they see a theatrical production for the first time, the same thing happens when they see a carnival production or a carnival ball. It truly is the magical, mystical, fantasy world that's there in front of your eyes. It's up to you to open your eyes and see it and experience it.
I have to ask you this one question. It's called the glitter question. Can you tell us about your glitter story?
Glitter story?
Glitter.
Well, I guess it's just from all my years of doing glitzy carnival and theatrical stuff, there's always a joke that I'm covered in glitter, and when anybody asks, are you okay? No, I'm okay. I just cut myself shaving. I bleed glitter. There was a story. Oh, there's a fabulous story. Jack Payne had the Moulin Rouge nightclub on Bourbon Street for a while, and he did a theatrical production, Night in New Orleans, Nighttime Naughties, an original musical done here in New Orleans with a bunch of New Orleans stars. Well, there is a gal in New Orleans by the name of Becky Allen who is just wonderful.
Oh, she's infamous.
Big old wonderful woman.
Infamous, right?
I'm sorry?
She's infamous down here.
Oh, she's sort of infamous, but in a good way.
Okay.
But there was one day, everybody was gathering for the show, and there's this trail of glitter through the theater, through the house, up the steps to the dressing room. And sure enough, getting upstairs, there's Becky. She had bought herself some more glitter to wear, and there was a hole in the bag, and she left this little trail like Hansel and Gretel all the way through the house up into the dressing room. These are some of the things that happen when you live in New Orleans and work with theater and carnival.
I guess Roto-Rooter had a glittering day that day, right?
It really is difficult. If you have it on your face, you've got to get baby wipes and wipe as much of it off as you can before you get into the shower. It's a hazard of living here.
Okay, Eddie, and we have like 4 minutes before close, and I want you to be able to tell my audience, your fabulous sights, everything, but also, you're also known as the last minute costume guy.
So, yes, I do that annually for WWO, where I go in and I show people last minute. Here's, I made this out of this around the house. You've got this stuff around the house, too. You can make a poster board headpiece and decorate it with this, that, and the other, and look, you got a headpiece for your child. Go for it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, tell everybody, like, what tips we have before we close. Like, what do you want your audience to know that? I mean, you're so fabulous. I know you. Everybody in New Orleans knows you. People nationwide knows you. But for those that don't know you, look on the air. Just, it's your chance to roll with it.
Okay. I'm just a short, energetic guy who has a lot of artistic ability, and I love nothing more than to work with young people and their families in being able to unleash the creativity that's within themselves for whatever personas that they choose, that they want for, let's say, a theatrical production or a carnival or a party or just even a birthday. Whatever the situation, it's within each person. Everybody has that capability of being able to do a little research, looking at something, and creating something wonderful and memorable out of that. Everybody's got that ability. And I just happen to be one of those people who likes to go around, I guess like Johnny Appleseed in a way, and help present that fact to people because people shut that down. They turn that part of the brain off. It's the part of being a child. It's the part of being able to play.
Well, Eddie, how can listeners see and get one of your simply stunning designs? Where would they go to?
Well, I have a Facebook page. It's Simply Stunning Designs NOLA. That's the word simply, the word stunning, the word designs, and then New Orleans, Louisiana's abbreviation. Simply Stunning Designs NOLA. And I have all manner of things. Of course, you know, here in New Orleans, we have seasons like everybody else, so we always do things like Halloween stuff and Christmas stuff and, of course, Carnival. So there's an awful lot to look at on my site, lots of designs. I've just released a gallery of this year's wreaths and things. And there's videos. There's so much stuff that people will be able to get a better idea, not necessarily just what I do, but the just the creativity that comes when you allow yourself to have your own empowerment to get out there and create the magic that's within you.
Well, Eddie, thank you for being my guest today. You created a lot of imagery and magic for my show. Thank you.
Ooh.
And
Edwin
R. Cox. Thank you, y'all. Y'all come down to Mardi Gras. Bye.
Yes.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.